So I'm the responsible of the CAPS teams. CAPS means compiler architecture for superscalar and special purpose microprocessors. So I am a computer architect. A disclaimer, I must apologize. There will be no nice mathematical formula. There will be no theorem. But by the way, when I was young, I got an aggregation of maths. So, but it was a long time ago. So I am a computer architect. And for the last 20 years, I have been an observer of the high performance computer architecture research and industry. And up to the 80s, the beginning of the 80s, the main focus of the research on computer architecture was on mainframes. Then, up to the beginning of the 90s, it was on supercomputers. And till now, it is on general purpose microprocessor. But it will be moving, it is moving to mobile computing and embedded computing, but still with a focus on general purpose. And as an observer, I have seen that uniprocessor architecture has driven the performance progress so far. And that's due to a pseudo-technological law, the Moore's law. And what does this law say? It predicts essentially exponential growth. It predicts exponential growth on the number of transistors on the processor chip, on the number of the performance of the processor, and also of the size of the main memory. And this doubles every 18 months, maybe 20 months, but still, it's impressive. And just to performance measured in instruction per cycle, per second. Okay? And during the 30 years of Iriza life, it came to a 1 million factor. And that's illustrating the Moore's law on transistor on a processor chip. So the first Intel microprocessor, the 4004, was featuring only 2,000 transistors. And the Intanium Montecito announced in February this year features 1.7 billion transistors. So close to 1 million factor. At the same time, Iriza was born. And it also grows, okay? Not with the same growth, but still. So Moore's law in terms of memory. The first DRAM chip was made by Intel also and featured only 1 kbit. And now we are using 1 gigabit DRAM chips. So that's a million factor. At the same time, we are changing directors. We got 6 directors I plugged on this diagram. The weight of. Okay, so performance. Performance increased also at a tremendous rate. We came from 60 kilo instruction per second, and that was 4 bits operations. And we are now at 20 giga instruction per second, and that's 32-bit operation. So I will say that's more than 1 million factor. At the same time, my group, people were arriving. Jacques L'Enfant was arriving before that. It was he arrived in 70. I arrived in 83. François Baudin graduated in 89. Pierre Michaud joined in 99. And Isabelle Puyot joined us last year. And parallel machines so far. So parallel machines have been built from every processor generation. And mainly, hardware coherent shared memory processors, multiprocessors have been built. So dual processor boards you are used to. You have also on the market multiprocessors with up to 8 processors sharing on a bus. Or you have also large and very expensive hardware coherent non-uniform memory architecture. And also you have some distributed memory systems. So that Intel IPSC Paragon was where examples that were bought by IRISA 10 or 15 years ago. And now we have clusters and clusters of clusters and so on. But as an observer, I must say that parallel machines have not been mainstream so far. But in my change, I will not say in my change. It will change. But let us go back to what has prevented parallel machines to prevail so far. That was first the economic issue. The hardware cost grew superlinearly with the number of processors. The performance was lagging. The manufacturers were not able to use the last generation microprocessors in their parallel machines. So there was a problem. The performance was lagging after the performance of the last generation microprocessor. And there is a scalability issue. The bus snooping, putting processors on the same bus, does not scale above 4 to 8 processors. That's life. And parallel application is simply missing. Just because writing parallel application requires to think parallel just at the beginning of the developing the application, and that's very difficult. And also, automatic parallelization works only on small segments. It works on niche market. You are able to parallelize nest loops, but that's not the main applications. So what has prevented parallel machines to prevail? We, the computer architects, we are also guilty for that. We just found how to use all these transistors, 1 billion, in a uniprocessor and provide the performance. Yeah, you may say, oh, yes, the integrated circuit technology industry provides the performance. No, they brought the transistors and the frequency. But we brought the performance. And also compiler guys helped. So what was microarchitecture about till now, till 2 years ago? The memory access time is around 100 nanoseconds, OK? You got a program semantic that is essentially sequential. You got the instruction life, which is around 10 to 20 nanoseconds, and instruction life is fetching it, decoding it, executing it, accessing the memory, validating the instruction. And our job was, how can we use all the transistors the integrated circuit industry is providing us to achieve the highest performance as possible? And we are not so bad. So far, we were able to build processors that execute up to 4 instructions every 0.3 nanosecond. That's 1,000 times better than the memory access time. So it's not bad. And for this, we were using the following toolbox. We are using pipelining, instruction level parallelism, speculative execution, and memory hacking. Let us detail. So pipelining, just you slice instruction life in equal stage, and you launch concurrent execution of the instructions. So OK, here, I illustrate one instruction fetch, then decode, then execution, then memory access, then you have to validate, and we launch one instruction per cycle. Of course, we got some trouble sometimes. We got dependency between instruction I1 to instruction I2. So we have to cancel the third instruction here. But still, we got an acceleration. Then we go to instruction level parallelism. We launch two or more instructions per cycle. OK, let us go to four. And of course, we pipeline it. So we got more instruction, more slots that are canceled. That's life. But we want to optimize resource usage. So we execute as soon as possible the instruction when they are valid. So for this, we decouple the life of an instruction in three steps: instruction, fetch, decode. Then we wait until the operands become valid, we execute, and finally, we validate the instruction. And this way, we are able to execute out of order. The second instruction is executed before the first one, and this way, we are able to fill all the slots and to execute at two instructions per cycle. Of course, we validate the instruction in order. The CT here is commit. Then we are facing the problem of branches. The problem is that in a program, you have a lot of branches. Typically, you will have 10 to 15% of the instructions that have branches. And on the Pentium 4, for example, the direction on the target of the branch is known at cycle 31. We cannot afford to wait 31 cycles for executing the next instruction, for fetching the next instruction. So what we do, we predict the branch direction on target, and we execute speculatively everything that comes after the branch. We validate, of course, execution time, and we rely on state-of-the-art predictors. And state-of-the-art predictors ensures you that you will not have too much misprediction. Approximately two mispredictions per kilo instruction against 100 to 150 branches per k instruction. So that's quite efficient. Of course, we also predict other things. We predict memory dependency and memory independency to schedule the memory access. And we also predict some data value. And after that, oh, it was before historically, but we got the problem of the memory wall. The memory wall is here. You got the processor. It's running very fast. But the main memory is responding very slowly. It responds in around 300 cycles. That represents about 1K instruction. I cannot lose 1K instruction slot each time I access the main memory. So I put an first level caches, I cache and D cache. You see that dollar means cache. Okay? The response time of these caches is 1 or 2 cycles. But of course they are very small. So what I do? I put a larger cache, L2 cache, second level, which responds in longer time, but it captures most of the access, okay? But still, I get troubles when I got misses on the L2 cache. Hey, I will stop for 300 cycles every time my L2 cache is missing? Hey, no. So I try to predict which memory block will be missing in the near future, and I bring it in the L2 cache. And that's prefetching, and that may take a lot of transistors, of course. So that was the situation till, I will say, 2-3 years ago. But can we continue to just throw transistors in unit processor and keep on having better and better performance? So what can we do? We can increase the number of instructions per cycle, so the degree of the superscalar processor. We can have larger cache, bring L3, maybe or L4 cache, which will be larger. Or we can implement new prefetch mechanism. But it seems that the uniprocessor road seems a little bit over. Okay, we have 1 billion transistors. And it seems that building a 16 to 32 way uniprocessor is out of reach. There is just not enough instruction level parallelism in the application. There are also other problems. There are a few key components, the register file, the bypass network, the issue logic, which have more than quadratic complexity in terms of silicon area, in terms of number of transistors. And these components are power hungry. And if they are power hungry, they generate temperature hotspot on the chip. And to avoid temperature hotspot on the chip, the only solution is to distribute the functionality. But if you distribute the functionality, then you got long intra-CPU communication. And that will require more than one cycle. So by doing that, you kill the pipeline. You simply lengthen it. And another problem is that it takes about 5 to 7 years to design and test a four-way superscalar processor core. I cannot imagine how long it will take to design and test a 16-way superscalar core.
What do you mean by way, 16-way?
That's the number of instructions that you are launching in parallel. So you have to fetch, decode, etc. So the only solution that is available is billion transistors. Superscalar processor are underused. So you share the functional units of a superscalar processor between several processes. The advantage of this approach is that a single process can use all the resources if it can. And you got a dynamic sharing of all structures on parallel and multiprocess workload. So let us illustrate that. Here I got a superscalar processor with only one thread, and the unused slots are white here. So you see that you are losing a large number of slots. Maybe these slots are not unoccupied. They may be occupied by wrong path instructions, but they are not useful. And on the other side, you got SMT where the pipeline is shared between several threads. And you see that you have better throughput in terms of general throughput of the processor. So now, the other way, the chip multiprocessor. So you put a shared memory multiprocessor on a single chip, Okay? Ah, so you duplicate the processor. Okay. You duplicate these L1 caches. Okay. Maybe you duplicate also the L2 caches. And you put the L3 cache on the chip. And, of course, you keep the caches current on the chip. Okay, you share the L3 cache, and you share the external interface to memory and system. So why is this simple solution? It's intellectually is nothing. It did not appear really before 2003. Because till 2003, we had better usage for transistors. Single process performance was the most important thing. And we were throwing transistors to speed up the superscalar implementation. We are throwing transistors in the L2 cache, in the L3 cache, and so on. But that has diminishing return. And we are at a point where the diminishing return is ridiculous. Why it should not still appear as mainstream? Of course, there's no significant benefit in complexifying single processor. But logically, what I should do is not to put more processors. I should use smaller and cheaper chips in my computers. Or I should integrate more functionality on the same chip. For example, the graphic pipeline. And there's still a very poor catalog of parallel applications. So just because single processor is still mainstream, and that's eggs and chicken. And also, parallel programming is still the privilege or the knowledge of a very few. You basically need a PhD in computer science for parallel programming. So, but they are appearing, and that's a reality. They are becoming mainstream now just because of the economic factor. You and I, the consumer user, is used to pay 1K to 2K euro for a PC. That's the price. The professional user accepts to pay 2K to 3K euro for a PC. That's the price for this. And the constant in that is that the processor represents 15 to 30% of the price. And there's no reason for which Intel or AMD will cut their share on this price. So they have to bring something new to you, and what they are selling to you now is parallelism. You need parallelism. That's what they are saying. And that is becoming an industry reality. By Intel, IBM, and I must say also Sun. So if PCs, they have, Intel has introduced a dual core Pentium 4 this year. And Pentium 4 was designed as a two-thread simultaneous multi-thread. So you got 4 degrees of parallelism. AMD has introduced a dual core AMD 64. On the server side, Intel introduced a dual core two thread SMT. IBM also. And Sun has announced an 8-core processor with 4 threads. Not SMT, but 4 threads. Still 4 threads, 4 contexts. So now, let us imagine the programmer. You got 4 cores. You got on each one 4 threads. They have their L1, L2 cache, and you got L3 caches. You got a huge main memory, and you have to tune for performance on that. Oh, why it appears now? So you have to write the application with more than 16 threads. Hey, that's not easy. You have to take into account the first level memory hierarchy sharing. Okay, I already do that. Oh, no, not every day, but you have to take into account the second level memory hierarchy sharing. Hey, I have to optimize it for instruction level parallelism also. And all this process will be competing for memory bandwidth. And that may be the real difficulty. So hardware thread, yeah, 5 minutes, hey. Hardware thread level parallelism is there. But where is the thread? Where is the process? But there's some hope. That's a unique opportunity for the software industry. Just think about it. The hardware parallelism comes for free just because when you will buy a laptop or a desktop next year or 2 years from now, it will be a parallel machine. Whatever you want. So now, as an architect, we are waiting for the threat. What can we do? We can generate artificial threads to increase performance of single-threaded application. Okay, so we can use speculative threads. So we predict the threads at a medium granularity, either by software or hardware, and we try to improve the performance of this single thread. We can run helper threads. Helper threads is you run ahead a speculative skeleton of the application to avoid what kill your performance. What may kill your performance is branch misprediction or data that are missing in the cache. So we run these helper threads to help you to get the data in time on the cache. Or you can use it for fault tolerance. People are much more and more concerned by hardware transient faults. Hardware transient faults are faults that occur sometimes due to a single event such as alpha particles or cosmic ray. And in order to avoid that, you run twice the same threads on two cores and you check integrity. If you you do not get the same result, say, hey, there's an error. That's a critic and I must cancel. Okay, you can use this performance for security. For example, for array-bound checking, that's nearly for free when you think about it on out of order core. You can use the extra performance for encryption or decryption. Or what you must know is that the hardware clock frequency is limited by the power budget. Okay, and the power budget is defined every core running, and you got temperature hotspots on the chip also. So you have to stop a processor due to the temperature on this processor. Okay, so but if you have a single thread workload, what you can do is to run at the highest clock as possible. You reach a hotspot on your core executing, then you migrate the thread on another core which is cold because there is only one thread. So you run on the other core, run in another hotspot, migrate, and so on. So conclusion. So I am time. So hardware thread level parallelism is becoming mainstream for general purpose computing. That's the reality. In the near future, let's say for the next 5 or 7 years, we will have moderate degrees of hardware thread level parallelism on our processor, in laptops, in desktops. That's the first real opportunity for the whole software industry to go parallel. But I'm not sure that for this. So it might demand a new generation of application developer to take benefit from that.